This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And we wish you a happy Thanksgiving, a day centered for most of us around a familiar feast that's all the more special by being just about the same every year. And I'm sure it's great just about every time, but maybe not your best meal ever. Yesterday, Frances Sisson of St. Louis emailed us to say that her best meal was in June 1988. I'd come to New York from St. Louis to spend a few days with my son, Richard. He and his friend Jim, who worked as a waiter at a trendy restaurant, planned a belated birthday meal, especially for me, a non-meat eater. The meal, she remembers, included salmon carpaccio with mustard, sliced Romano and arugula, poached sea scallops, shiitake mushrooms and roasted yellow, red and yellow peppers, shrimp and baby squid and soy honey sauce, artichoke ravioli with tarragon cream sauce, and chocolate mousse with fresh raspberries. The wine was a Saint Clement Sauvignon Blanc. I have a wrinkled old yellow scrap of paper on which I typed the menu after returning to St. Louis. Have I eaten that well since? No. And today at 73, I don't think that I could. So call or email us with the story of your best meal ever. Was it the food, the company, the circumstances? And save some room for dessert. Later in the program, we'll go in search of America's apple pie. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And Nancy Leeson joins us now. She's the restaurant critic for the Seattle Times, also an avid cook, and was kind enough to share her Thanksgiving Day with us from her home in Edmonds, Washington. And happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much.
You're having a dinner later at your house, I understand. I hope we're not bothering you too much.
Not too much. I was just putting the final touches on the folding tables in the middle of the living room.
Is that where the kids have to sit?
No, the kids are actually sitting with us. There's only three of them this year.
Ah, that's good. Anyway, we're asking a question that I guess is impossible for a food critic, somebody who eats for a living. What's the best meal you've ever had?
I've been thinking about that and thinking about it, and all I'm coming up with are several meals. The theme here, however, is that all of those meals were eaten alone, which I think is very different from most folks. All of the meals that were perfectly memorable, that were the most perfect meals that I can recall, are the ones in which I was sitting alone, often at a sushi bar. One of the best meals I can think of recently was at my favorite sushi bar here in Seattle called Saito's, and at Le Pichet, another restaurant here in Seattle, where I sat and ate the most delicious piece of chicken that I can recall ever eating, and finished that with a little round of Saint Marcellin cheese. And I've decided that for me, perfection as a restaurant critic comes from not being on the job and being able to pay a lot of attention to what I'm eating because I'm eating what I want for myself.
Yeah. It's interesting. When you have to think about what you're going to write about it afterwards, it kind of spoils the occasion.
And another thing is that when you're dining by yourself and you love restaurants as much as I do, you have an opportunity to pay a lot of attention to what's going on around you, to do it for yourself. I mean, I love restaurants as theater, and I'm so entertained by them. And when you're with other people, you're entertaining them, you're listening to their stories, you're talking. When you're by yourself, you can choose to speak to folks sitting around you and really just zero in on what you're eating.
I wonder, you go to all kinds of different restaurants and all kinds of different chefs. Different cultures measure good meals differently, I suspect.
I'm sure that's true. And interestingly, the woman from St. Louis that we heard earlier about her favorite meal sounded fabulous. In a lot of ways, for someone like myself, that's the kind of meal that I eat frequently. And that's why the purity of, for example, Japanese food always appeals to me.
Some people might say that's simple.
That's right. It is simple. And I think that sometimes the best foods are the simplest. And maybe that's why everybody likes to have the same turkey every year at Thanksgiving.
Do you think that you could recreate a best meal?
You mean at home?
Mm-hmm.
Hardly. I don't think so, no.
Okay.
You?
No. unless it comes frozen. I suspect not. Is there something that if you were designing your, you know, something that would be the ideal meal for yourself, some guilty pleasure in there? I mean, after all of the great pieces of sushi or whatever, maybe a Twinkie for dessert?
I'm not a Twinkie person, but I'd like a good Reese's peanut butter cup.
Ooh, do you like them cold?
No, I like them room temp.
different temperatures for different people. All right. We're going to ask, of course, all of you out there listening to call us and suggest your best meals ever. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, TOTN at NPR.org. By the way, if you're calling in while you're driving today, especially, be very careful. Pull over to the side of the road before you call in. Just be careful, this day of all days particularly. Marilyn joins us now on the phone from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hello there. How are you, Neil?
Happy Thanksgiving. Are you digging out there?
Well, thank you. Yes, yes, we are. We have 11 inches of snow, so it's quite a day here.
What's your best meal ever?
Well, my best meal ever, maybe it was more like my most memorable meal, occurred back in 1992, and some friends of ours were visiting us from Madrid, Spain, and Clara, our friend, is just an outstanding cook. We were camping at Rabbit Blanket Lake up in Canada. That's in the Lake Superior Provincial Park. It's at the eastern end of Lake Superior, just a beautiful, beautiful place. So we were camping in tents and cooking over a Coleman two-burner stove and couldn't decide what to have for dinner one night. And Clara asked, en español, ¿quieres paella? Do you want paella? And so we went to the store, bought the ingredients, and she cooked paella over a Coleman two-burner with two well-used frying pans. And it was one of those marvelous dinners under the sky with wonderful friends and a good bottle of wine. Boy, it sustains me today.
Nancy Leeson, a paella on a Coleman two-burner. That's impressive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sounds too good to me. I once had Persian food on the top of a mountain.
Oh, my. That rivals
leftovers, and it wasn't warmed, but I remember just thinking, I bet no one else was up here eating Adam John at the top of this mountain.
Let me read you guys this email. Your friend was from Spain, Marilyn.
Yes.
In 1997, writes Arl, in 1997, my brother, a Hungarian friend, and I completed a hike of about 500 miles in northern Spain in the small village of Fisterra on the Atlantic coast. While in Fisterra, we found a small tavern, a hole in the wall called the Café Bar Tito. We went in and found it was run by two old fishermen. It was so local, it didn't even have printed menus since people in town knew what they had available. So we asked them what they had, and they ran through a list of food, including calamaris, squid. Yeah. When we said we all like squid, they asked us how we'd like it and gave us a number of options. Not knowing Spanish so well, we jumped on one option we did understand, bocadillas de calamares, squid sandwiches, and ordered those. The sandwiches turned out to be the best seafood I've ever had, bar none. We went back twice more in the next 24 hours for squid sandwiches.
I could do that.
You know, is there something about also the end of the hike, or Marilyn, you're being out there in the woods?
Oh, yes, I think that adds to it. You have the wonderful aromas coming from other families cooking, but you know yours is the best.
I love the idea of having squid on a sandwich. That's a new one for me.
Isn't it?
Oh,
yeah. You're automatically wanting to write back and say, so what did they use except for the squid? I mean, was it butter? Some sort of mayonnaise? You're dying to know. Garlic?
It would be, it would be probably olive oil and garlic, maybe some lemon squeezed over it. But I'm wondering, okay, what size are the squid? You know, some of them are as small as your thumb, and some are much larger. And were they cut into rings? And did they have those wonderful little tentacles in the sandwiches?
And were the squid fried where they would be incredibly crunchy? And was the bread toasted?
Mm.
All these questions. Marilyn, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it, and have a great Thanksgiving.
You have a wonderful holiday, too, and thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye now.
We thought we'd invite a few other people to reflect on their last meal as well. Now joining us from his kitchen in Princeton, New Jersey, is author Changrai Lee, a professor at Princeton where he teaches creative writing. He's best known as the author of Native Speaker. His latest novel is called Aloft. But Professor Lee is also an avid cook. His essays about food have appeared in Gourmet and in the New York Times Magazine. Professor Lee, thanks very much for being with us today, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Neil.
So what does a best or memorable meal, what does that entail for you?
Well, it usually entails, of course, the food being pretty good. I don't think it's all a matter of it being the greatest taste in the world or in your life. I think it also, involves what's around it, you know, this particular moment, the time, the people, certainly. So when I was thinking about, and you guys asked what the best meal I ever had, I had to go through a lot of things. trying to think about, I guess, memorable moments, you know, moments that really stuck out for me. And when I thought about not just the food, but the bigger picture.
Including, I suspect, and we're thinking about this, the state of your stomach. You got to be pretty hungry.
Yeah, usually you're pretty hungry. Although the problem is sometimes you're sort of faced with an incredible meal and you're not as hungry as you might be. That's happened to me before. But I've had so many. I've been lucky because I live near New York, of course, and so there are great, you know, fantastic restaurants here, and we cook a lot at home, and a lot of the food that we make at home, although, you know, I can't quite say that it's the best food ever, it seems the best to us, you know, very simple meals of linguine with clams or a Korean dish that we might make.
But, well, given that, why don't you just give us your most recent awesome meal?
Well, most recently, I would say that it was not quite a meal. It was an afternoon I had in Normandy this summer. I was visiting a poet named C.K. Williams at his house in Normandy. And I'd gone to the farmer's market nearby and saw this fellow there with crates of oysters. And so I thought, well, I must have these oysters. They actually were from Brittany, not Normandy. So I bought about 24 of them, and I took them back to the house. No one else was really that interested in them for some reason. So I just went outside on the patio, and I had an oyster knife that I'd bought that day, too. I don't normally carry an oyster knife with me. And really just went one by one, kind of opening them, sitting on the porch, looking at the dying light. You know, I had a really cold glass of crisp white wine, and I really thought that, you know, I was in heaven. I thought that this was probably the greatest recent meal I'd had in a long time. And I think it was mostly because it took a long time. You know, it takes a long time to open the oyster. They're reluctant little creatures. But once you open them, they're so briny and cold and succulent. And so I thought I'm going to always remember this.
I suppose a meal of oysters is not inappropriate for Thanksgiving Day.
And no, I always have oysters on Thanksgiving. We have some today going as well, of course.
I wonder, have you ever been sort of metaphorically outside the restaurant with your face pressed against the window?
Well, I had an experience once, and I was thinking about this meal that I almost had. I had part of. I was just graduated from college and traveling around France with my girlfriend in one of those post-college trips. And we'd had a nice time in France, you know, pretty modest trip. And we were heading to Paris for one last night. And a nice fellow, quite a well-known art dealer named Harry Lunn, who was a friend of my girlfriend's father, invited us to have lunch at his apartment. And he had apparently a wonderful, sort of very bohemian but elegant apartment overlooking the Louvre, right on the river. And so we thought, well, we'll go see him for a nice luncheon to sort of round out the trip before I got on the plane. The night before, unfortunately, I had met up with a college friend who was living in Paris, and he invited us out to a tasting at an eau de vie bar. Which, if you know what eau de vie is, it's a...
These are very powerful liquors.
It's very powerful. It's like aquavit.
Yeah.
It's literally the water of life, and it comes in lots of flavors, depending on what fruit it's made out of, pear or sometimes even blueberry or raspberry. And this particular bar, of course, because it was an eau de vie bar, had every flavor imaginable. And what seemed like a good idea at the time to have an eau de vie tasting very quickly became not a good idea. I mean, you can do that with wine or beer, but, you know, you have little tastes of about 10 or 15 little eau de vies. I'm not such a heavy drinker, so I was a little worse for wear the next morning.
Well, I'm sorry you didn't get to enjoy that meal. I hope you enjoy yours today. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about the best or maybe just most memorable meal you've ever eaten. We're ruling out Thanksgiving Day feasts just for today. I'm sure nothing in your memory could possibly compare to what you're having or about to have or already had, whatever. In any case, our guest is Seattle Times restaurant critic Nancy Leeson. We'd also like to thank Chang Ray Lee for joining us earlier from Princeton. We were so hurried at the end of the break, didn't get to say a proper thank you to him. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by the former heavyweight champion of the world, George Foreman. But anyway, we want to hear from you, and this is our next phone call is Ellen. Ellen is calling from Philadelphia.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I didn't think I'd be on so fast.
Well, you're lucky.
Okay. It must have been in 1978 when, right after the nuclear power plant disaster at Three Mile Island.
Of course, yes.
I live in Philadelphia, and there was a protest arranged where buses would take us from Philadelphia to Washington for the day. So I went. I must have been 25 at the time. And so I was inexperienced with traveling a lot. I didn't pack any meals, but sitting next to me was a woman who was the girlfriend of a restaurateur, a really hip and happening restaurant. So she brought a bag of crudité, mixed vegetables. I never even heard the word crudité before. So she was offering everyone on the bus crudité, and I had maybe a couple pieces of carrots. But throughout the entire day, there was no place that I could get something to eat because I had just become a vegetarian. Maybe I stopped, but I still ate fish from time to time at that point. So I didn't eat anything the entire day. And maybe 8 o'clock at night, the buses took us back home. We stopped, it must have been at a Greyhound terminal, to get something to eat. And there, right on the countertop, were a bunch of sandwiches. And there was a tuna fish sandwich on white bread that was cut on the diagonal and folded in half and wrapped in real tightly in saran wrap. It was so tightly wrapped that the whole sandwich must have been a half an inch thick, soaked with mayonnaise, wrapped up, maybe sitting on the counter all day. That was the best meal that I've ever had, ever. And now I'm 51 now. Nothing has compared.
See, I was convinced that you were going to say that after starving all day and you were a vegetarian and you got home to Philadelphia and you had a cheesesteak.
I don't think that would have happened.
Well, I'm from Philadelphia myself, and that's always the first thing I do.
Oh, I see. Well, now I'm a vegan, so I don't partake in a Thanksgiving feast at all. I go to my brother's afterwards for dessert.
Well, we wish you a happy dessert.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Here's an email we got from Laura Green, who describes herself as the juggling queen. Greetings from Whitehall, Maryland. In 1988, I was working as a street juggler in Osaka, Japan. Every night, our Japanese employees took our gang of ravenous jugglers to a fine restaurant. All we could eat, they picked up the tab. Every night, unlimited exotic sushi and exquisite Kobe beef with plenty of Kirin beer. Our hosts were very alarmed at the amount of food Americans could put away, especially after a day of hard-fired juggling on the streets. That sounds like a meal that might appeal to you.
I'll say.
The Kirin beer, when cold, boy, that's pretty good. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Ken. Ken's calling from San Rafael, California.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My most memorable restaurant, or my most memorable meal, best meal, was in 1991. I was at a restaurant called Azure in Minneapolis that I actually worked at as a wait assistant, and thought I'd take advantage of my half-off employee discount, which came in handy because the bill was like $180 with the discount. Anyway, and that's relevant to the story because I was on a date, and it was awesome. We had sapphire tonics to start, and then we had a mushroom ragu for an appetizer and rack of lamb. We had a lime and mango bomb for dessert with espressos and aperitifs, and lots of little extras and from the kitchen, because it's great when you work at a really nice restaurant and then you come in and you get a lot of neat little things coming out on little plates. So I was very full, and I went into the bathroom and after dinner, and it all came up, the
oh,
whole
no.
meal. And I remember noticing the exquisite decor of the bathroom, as I was watching the $180 come up, it was quite an evening. And I'd never told my date. I came back out and I was acting as if I just washed my hands, but I was thinking, oh my God, that happened to me once before too at another restaurant.
Yeah, she didn't catch on when you wanted to stop at Carvel on the way home.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it was really something. I don't know, wait assistants don't make that much money. That was a big chunk of my pay, you know. Anyway,
rich for your blood, I think.
Yeah, it was quite memorable. It was a great restaurant too. It's too bad it closed. I enjoyed working there, and I ended up working at Goodfellas, another great restaurant in Minneapolis, a couple of years later, and did not have that one come up. That was a great place to eat and work as well.
It is funny you should mention Goodfellas, because in that movie, again, the circumstances are often the most compelling thing about a great meal. In that movie, it's Ray Liotta who describes one of the great meals in cinematic history.
Yeah, yeah.
In prison, dinner was always a big thing. We had a pasta course, and then we had a meat or a fish. Paulie did the prep work. He was doing a year for contempt, and he had this wonderful system for doing the garlic. He used a razor, and he used to slice it so thin that it used to liquefy in the pan with just a little oil. It's a very good system. Vinny was in charge of the tomato sauce.
Ah, got the smoke. That treat, the kinds of meat and meatballs.
What'd you put in
there? Veal, beef, and pork.
Ah, good, but you gotta have the pork.
Oh, that's the flavor.
I felt he used too many onions.
Used too many onions. My gosh, I can smell that garlic even now. That's great stuff. Ken, what are you having for dinner today? I guess Ken has left us to go slice some garlic with a razor blade. It's another email we've got. This from Jeff Hendy in El Dorado Hills, California. The most memorable was in 1944 when, as an 8-year-old boy growing up in southern England, my friends and I put together a meal on the beach made up of what to us ration kids were the delicious parts of K-rations. I'm not sure whether the many K-rations that floated in on the tide were accidentally or deliberately cast into the sea from the many ships that were arriving with GIs preparing for D-Day, but the Spam, cheese, and coffee made a feast to remember. Thanks, America, says Jeff Handy. Interesting, just a couple of days ago, I think the inventor of the K-rations saw his obit in the newspapers. Let's get another caller on the line, and this will be Eric. Eric is calling from Tucson, Arizona.
Hey.
Happy Thanksgiving, Eric.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Thanks for taking my call. You know, you mentioned before that circumstances are sometimes a key component to a great meal, and this definitely will add to that scenario. Basically, it was 62. We were hiking up a mountain, and it was just about getting dark. It would be well after dark by the time we got to the top, and it was sort of a spur of the moment thing. And my wife-to-be and I were doing the hiking, and we realized that not only had we not brought a flashlight, but we didn't bring water, and we brought no food except for a coconut. And by the time we got to the top, we were pretty thirsty and dry, and luckily this was in New Hampshire in the summertime, and it had just been raining a lot, so there was plenty of water up at the top of the mountain, and so we got to the top, we were exhausted, and we cracked the coconut open on a rock and gathered wild blueberries in the coconut. And it was just the best tasting stuff that I'd ever had in my life. We sat there at the top of the mountain, nobody else around, probably, 10 or 11 at night, and it was just glorious.
How gorgeous is that? That's beautiful. You know, when I was about, I think, 19 years old, I was in Puerto Rico for the first time, and with a friend walking down the beach, being completely fascinated about how warm it was when it was so cold back in New Jersey, where I'd been living. And a small boat came up with a bunch of villagers in it, maybe about 10 guys. They came out. They hailed us. One guy spoke great English. He said he used to live in New York. And he proceeded to jimmy up a coconut tree, knock a coconut down, use a machete to cut the top off, and gave us this coconut where we were able to drink the cool coconut milk, which is actually water,
mm-hmm.
that is so sweet and pure and delicious and cool from being up in the shade of the palm. And I'll never forget that as long as I live.
So far our Thanksgiving dinner consists of coconut milk and some oysters. So we'll have to build from there. Eric, thanks very much. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Checking in with us now from Las Vegas, Nevada, the former heavyweight champion of the world, now grill master, George Foreman. And George Foreman, thanks very much for taking time out of your Thanksgiving day to join us.
I'm happy to be with you. No better time to speak than on Thanksgiving.
What are you having for dinner today?
Everything's going to be built around turkey and ham.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, of course, you'll have the other with potato salad dressing and all of that. But the ham and the turkey are going to stick out loud today.
Well, what do you remember as your best meal ever?
Best meal ever, because growing up so poor, there was always a good meal, but it was always lacking enough for you to have seconds of what you really liked, unless you liked cornbread dressing. It was like, eat all that you want. But the 1 year must have been about the late 60s. My mother and I, we seemed to turn things around. We were having better days and a little more money, and she fixed Thanksgiving dinner. And inside the dressing, I reached, not aware, where it lined with turkey necks. Didn't matter where you reached into with the spoon for the dressing, there would be a turkey neck. And I sat there and didn't have to eat much dressing at all to get really filled. I was able to enjoy those turkey necks, one after another. Big, juicy turkey neck. That was the best meal I've ever had. And when I think about having a good day now, even celebrating, I don't think about what other guys do, a glass of champagne. I think about turkey necks submerged in cornbread dressing.
Wow, that's too much.
And she seasoned those things off to herself before she'd put them into the dressing. But as a youngster, we would always get a spoonful of dressing, and looking for little bits of meat. But this year, we were bathed with the turkey necks.
Of course, these days, as good as they were, I'm sure they would be much better now if they were properly grilled.
Now it's about living for as long as you can. Understanding that those were the days, and we made up for the lack of what. Now we want to make certain that we stay healthy for a long time. The curse of the grill is that it keeps you healthy. You can go on and be heavyweight champion of the world again. You know, I was heavyweight champion of the world at 45, about 24, and then at 45. There's a chance if I continue to take care of my health, I can do it again 55 and 65. There's a chance.
There's a chance.
The curse, if you take care of yourself, there aren't any limits.
There's not much of a heavyweight class either.
Yeah, you know, it's strange, but there aren't any celebrated or celebrity heavyweights. There are a lot of good boxers around. But the celebrity pool has been drained. There used to be the Louisville Lip, the Bear, the Rabbit, Big George Foreman, Smoking Joe Frazier. Reporters would give us these names. Now reporters don't seem to want to give us names anymore. They write about other things. We need Hemingway and George Plimpton. We need these writers back. That's what we need.
I wonder, on this day, can you fit a turkey in your grilling machine?
We have also the Lean Mean roasting machine, and also we have the rotisserie that you can really put that George Foreman Jr., George Foreman Sr. roasting machine that you really grill do the rotisserie with the grills. We roast them now. All of the fat drop to the bottom, and you have juicy turkey, juicy hams, all of these things, and they're big enough to fit big turkeys in them.
Let me ask our restaurant critic, Nancy Leeson, have you ever tried anything that's been grilled on a George Foreman grill?
You know what? I've tried a lot of things. We bought one of those because we were so impressed with. My husband went to see his mother in Chicago, and she had one. And he came home and said, we need to buy one, which I did. And we found the thing we love to cook the most on it is asparagus.
Whoa, that's my favorite.
Yeah. Shrimp does real well on George's machine, too.
But asparagus, I can tell you, I learned to love asparagus by way of the grill. Put them on, turn your back on them, come back. You can get them as crunchy as you want or just smooth as you want with your seasoning, marinated if you like. Asparagus, the grill, is perfect for them.
Well, George.
Of course, I do broccoli also.
George Foreman, good eating today. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. And don't forget my cookbook.
The cookbook is the George Foreman Indoor Grilling Made Easy.
really made easy there. Thank you so much.
Heavyweight champion, the former heavyweight champion, maybe the future heavyweight champion of the world, George Foreman, joined us from Las Vegas, Nevada. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another listener on the line. This is Charles. Charles calling from Modesto, California.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you out there.
I really appreciate Mr. Foreman's turkey necks, because nothing goes better than smoked turkey necks and white bean soup.
Ah. So, is that
I look for those in the market, and my upscale market's a little hard to find them.
But is that your most...
No, mine was surprisingly enough at a Carmelite monastery in Oakdale, California. I'd gone up on retreat, and it was a huge faux Georgian red brick building that had been a seminary years ago, and was occupied by about four parish priests in the Carmelite order who took care of outlying sort of circuit rider priests, and a Chilean priest who was up from an orphanage in Chile to learn English. And it was a really hot summer day in August, just roasting. And it's in the Napa Valley. And it was one of those what I call oak dust days. You can smell the oak trees and lavender, and it's dusty, and it just torpor sets in. You know, you just want to sit in one of those Adirondack chairs in the shade and not move.
Sort of atmospheric tryptophan, yeah.
Yeah, there was no word for that kind of tryptophan. I fell asleep praying at least three times. But come the dinner hour, I went up to have some conversation because I was on a silent retreat, and I figured at dinner I'd break it. And we met in the kitchen, and there was a huge kitchen table, refractory-type table, and the kitchen must have been 1940s with all those galvanized hoods and everything else. And I thought, oh, golly, look at this. It had ketchup bottles on the table and mustards, real bachelor quarters. And I noticed a lady cooking, and we sat down. Everybody was smiling, and how are you, how are you? And three of the priests were Irish and had a brogue just so thick you could spread it with a knife. And the meal came up, and I was just astounded. It was baby lamb chops, just au point, the French say, you know, just to the point, medium rare. Fresh garden peas and roast Yukon potatoes that had been picked in the garden that morning, the priest's garden that morning. The peas came out of the garden. The lamb was from 4 miles away and was a day old. It was heaven. I have never had a meal like that. I'm a retired chef, and I've eaten all over the world in some five-star and many vastly overrated yuppie havens. And it was just superb. And the chef's name was Gabby, and she was from New York, and she was the priest's cook for supper only.
It sounds like, Nancy Leeson, we may want to reconsider our vows.
Yeah, good idea.
It certainly wasn't Trappist fare, which is a little more austere.
So that sounds beautiful to me. That's just perfect, simple food. And it's part of what I find in the meals that I've enjoyed the most are the simplicity. And it's exactly as you say. You know, the lamb came from nearby. The peas came out of the garden. How much better can it get?
Well, it was great company, too. We had a light conversation about soccer, which everybody except Americans, you know, plays and watches and keeps score of. And there was tiramisu for dessert, which we finished off half of.
Can't go to dessert. We're going to dessert after the break.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I beg your pardon. But
all right.
It was just a spectacular meal.
All right, Charles. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
And Nancy Leeson, we're going to leave you a little bit short of dessert as well. Thank you very much for your time today.
You're very welcome.
Nancy Leeson is a restaurant critic for the Seattle Times, also an avid cook, and was kind enough to share part of her Thanksgiving Day with us from her home in Edmonds, Washington. As promised, when we come back from the break, a slice of apple pie. This is NPR News.